The president is set to sign an executive order today, setting a goal to get many more electric vehicles on the road. I'm David Brancaccio. President Biden today is expected to make moves to try to get half of the cars sold in this country running on electric by 2030, the end of this decade. Marketplace's Nova Safa joins me now. Nova, the president is to be joined at the White House today by the chief executives of three major car companies. What might we hear?
That's right. Ford, GM, and Chrysler parent Stellantis put out a joint statement today saying they're hoping 40 to 50% of their sales will be electric by 2030. Now, all three had recently announced those kinds of targets already, David. So the message they're trying to convey, along with the president at the White House today, is about his infrastructure agenda. They're tying the future of electric cars to that agenda. The bipartisan infrastructure bill in the Senate now has funding for charging stations, but at a fraction of what the president had initially proposed. He'd also wanted funding for things like consumer subsidies to buy electric cars. That's not in the bipartisan deal. And the car company chiefs are supporting Biden's other proposals. Tax incentives to buy electric, for example, have a second chance in the other infrastructure bill, the $3.5 trillion one that Democrats have put forward.
Now, other car companies and the union representing U.S. auto workers are also speaking out today?
They are. The United Auto Workers, in a statement, is focusing on the idea of creating new union jobs with electrification and developing manufacturing here in the U.S. The president has emphasized that. And we got a separate joint statement, David, from BMW, Honda, Ford, Volkswagen, and Volvo. They're calling for tougher nationwide emission standards. And not coincidentally, the Biden administration today will propose to tighten those standards, which were loosened during the Trump administration.
All right, Nova, thank you. And think about it. We keep reporting how many employers are having a tough time recruiting and keeping employees, with labor running short as the vast U.S. economy increasingly reopens. What does that imply about layoffs? Right. Those are hardly happening at all. Many a Thursday, we get a consultation with Diane Swonk, the chief economist at the tax and advisory firm Grant Thornton. Welcome, Diane.
Good morning.
Well, it's a boom time for a lot of things, but not a boom time for layoffs. Lowest in 21 years. It was the year 2000 when we saw layoffs this low. I guess that makes sense, right?
Yeah, we've got quit rates at the highest level since 2001, so that's not really all that surprising. What we're seeing is employers are really trying to hold on to the workers they have when they can't find enough workers to ramp up in an economy that's suddenly opening all at once.
Exactly. Now, we'll get the official hiring and unemployment reports tomorrow from the government. This will cover July as well. What are you thinking? A lot of economists think it should be pretty strong.
I think we're going to see a number close to 1,890,000 or so in the overall number. And that's good news out there for those workers who have been on the sidelines. We need to still get more to chip away at the jobs we lost, but we need big chunks like that in a month to get there.
Interesting to see what happens the month after the one we're living in now, August, because the Delta variant headlines are quite dominant now.
Exactly. And I don't expect another round of major restrictions in response to the Delta variant. But what's important is we know, frankly, it's not restrictions alone that guide consumer behavior. Those people who are worried about contagion, that fear can dampen down economic activity.
Yeah, we'll see how this actually plays out in our psychology. Diane Swonk, chief economist at Grant Thornton, thank you so much.
Thank you.
The World Health Organization is asking wealthier nations to maybe hold off on giving COVID booster shots to people who are already vaccinated until at least the end of September. So there's more vaccine to meet the WHO's goal of vaccinating 10% of the population of each and every country. Pfizer and Moderna, which released its quarterly results this morning, have been researching whether to offer boosters. The shots could represent billions in revenue for the companies. Marketplace's Stephanie Hughes has more.
47-year-old Mark Dinan is a recruiter in Silicon Valley. He got the Johnson & Johnson vaccine in April. Then, when the Delta variant came along, he started getting nervous that it wouldn't be enough.
You know, I have a small business. For me to get seriously ill from COVID would wipe me out. And I'm going to do everything I can to make sure that that doesn't happen.
So in late July, he went to his local CVS pharmacy and got a dose of the Pfizer vaccine too. What Dynan did isn't technically allowed. He got the extra shot by providing a different email and phone number than he did for the first dose.
I called up at 10 a.m. and I had my shot by noon. It's an incredible luxury in the United States that we have this access to vaccines.
Both Johnson & Johnson and the CDC say people who are fully vaccinated don't need additional doses right now. And scientists say all of the vaccines in use in the U.S. provide enough protection, even against COVID variants. Still, there are plenty of people like Dynan, and pharmaceutical companies are researching whether boosters are necessary. Jeff Meacham is a senior biotech and pharmaceutical analyst at Bank of America.
The companies are leading the narrative that we need boosters annually. We have no tolerance for any COVID infection, and we want to make sure we protect against kind of future variants.
Meacham says Moderna and Pfizer stand to bring in billions of dollars annually if regular boosters are needed. But if a person in the U.S. gets an extra dose of vaccine, that means there's a person somewhere else who doesn't get it. Now, the WHO is asking world leaders to prioritize who needs the vaccine the most. Andrea Taylor with the Duke Global Health Innovation Center says not to worry.
We're going to have enough. We need to be really careful about who gets it first.
Taylor points out the more widespread the virus is globally, the more likely it is to mutate, which could result in more variants making their way back to the U.S. I'm Stephanie Hughes for Marketplace.
For developments in workplace culture, innovation, markets, and the economy, may I propose from the media menu my colleague Kai Ryssdal's work on the evening show. Many public radio stations will carry it, of course. You can stream it also, marketplace.org. I'm David Brancaccio with our morning report from APM, American Public Media.